It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
He's bound and down, loaded up and trucking. Are we going to do what they say can be done?
Welcome to the Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Remco along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. Show is brought to you by UJ Chevrolet, serving Mobile since 1939, Alabama Pipe and Supply, and Ed's Seafood Shed.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah.
1939.
That is way back there. Hey, we already got a caller online.
All right.
Let's go there. Caller, you with us?
Yes, sir. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, sir. Doing fine. Thank you for taking my call. My name is Brian. I live over on the Eastern Shore.
Okay.
I have a 2011 F-150 pickup with a 5-liter
V8. Uh-huh.
Got almost 128,000 miles. Runs like a clock. When I get high miles, though, I get concerned about maintenance items that occur, and like, does it have a timing chain or timing belt, things like that. How do I go about finding out what maintenance items I should be paying attention to so that I don't have a major breakdown?
Right. Well, you know, if all else fails, you know, I'd go by the owner's manual. It should have a maintenance schedule in there. If you do not have the owner's manual, you can usually find it online. Even if you don't, and not necessarily have to buy it, but you can find the maintenance schedule listed online as well. If nothing else, I'm sure the Ford place would be glad to print one off for you. It's not the end all be all, but it's a good starting point. It'll tell you when your transmission needs to be serviced, when, you know, of course, your oil changes and that. Air filters, if it has a separate fuel filter, you know, the belts and hoses are kind of an inspection type thing. Right. You know, and honestly, we don't have a whole lot of belt and hose problem anymore. But, you know, just the general maintenance, I'm sure the plugs are probably 100,000 mile. If they haven't been done, I'm sure it's due for that. You don't have any timing belt to worry about on that motor, but, you know, just – the big thing is your oil changes and that kind of stuff. But, your maintenance schedule in the owner's manual is always a good go-to.
Okay. All right, sir.
Have you had any brake problems with it?
No, sir, I have not. I mean, I had the brakes changed. I had new discs put on, you know, replaced the calipers, and they honed the
they turned the rotors.
Yeah, turned rotors and that. Yeah.
Right, the rotors, right, exactly.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, you know, they're a wear item, right? So eventually,
yeah.
Depending on my driving habits, I eventually have to do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's depending on your driving habits, it determines how often you have to do that. So that's, yeah. But, and the only other thing on, like, your brakes is doing a fluid change. They're usually every 2 to 3 years, depending on the manufacturer. I'm not sure where Ford's at on theirs. Even General Motors change from time to time. So I always have to go back and double check. Right now, I think they're on 3 years. You know, it'd be a good idea to get that done from time to time because, you know, it does help keep the moisture and that out of the brake system. And there's a whole bunch of expensive components in there. That can be damaged from the moisture. So,
okay.
All right.
I will keep that on my list too. Then.
All right. Well, I appreciate you listening and calling
sir.
In.
Thank y'all. Y'all have a good evening.
All right. You too. But I mean that's always a good place to start. Is go to the owner's manual. And you know, anybody that's ever listened to this show knows one of my pet peeves is the owner's manual not being in the car.
Right.
You know, because that's there's so many different things that you might need to know that is in that book, you know. I do know, and I don't necessarily agree with it, but a lot of companies are going strictly online with their owner's manuals.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even some that have the owner's manual that is that comes up on your infotainment system. You can pull it up that way. I think some of the imports and there's some of the others that you can pull it up on your infotainment center. It's all well and good as long as everything's working, like your battery's charged and
right.
Key comes on and all that neat stuff.
What year did he say it was?
It was 5 liter. I think he said 10, I believe.
Okay.
But the
I was wondering he didn't say anything about having to change the tie rod ends and the upper and lower ball joints on that vehicle for that many miles over that length of time.
Yeah, and they do tend to show a little wear on those from that particular model, but every model has their quirks, things that are going to wear out quicker than others.
Am I correct in saying that one of the things that I see that may be detrimental to that is the fact that on the original components from the factory, there's no grease fittings on those units. Back in the day, we used to get a grease job, and we would we had the Zeus Faster, I believe it was.
Yeah, the Zerk.
Zerk. I had part of it, right? The Z.
Had a Z in there.
But you could if you were utilizing that vehicle, even a car on dirt roads or where you're getting on some dirt every now and then, or even on some gravel roads or whatever, you can pick up some small debris and dirt and what have you, trash that may cut the it's a rubber grommet on that, and it cut that grommet open and then get involved in the dirt. But if you were going to use that search deal and grease it, you could push all of that out.
Right.
And then you'd get that debris out of there so it wouldn't contaminate your grease.
And that worked, and that's they kind of got away from that because people were over greasing them and busting the boots on a lot of them.
Okay.
And causing problems as well. So they kind of got away from that.
So kind of eliminated it.
And as long as nothing gets up there and tears that boot, they're usually pretty decent. Most of your manufacturers have gotten away from a Zerk fitting in their components.
Okay.
We do. I'm not going to say we never see issues because we do, but it's not as often as you would think.
Do we still have problems with the boots on CV axles on front drive vehicles?
Almost never.
Really?
They're actually something usually has to get up there and damage them.
Have we changed maybe the type of product that is produced from?
Well, the original ones was just like a soft rubber, bellows.
Right.
And,
right.
Those didn't last long.
Right.
They gave up pretty quick. But the type of material they're using nowadays is more of a it almost feels like plastic to me, but it's a
so it's a different material.
A different type material.
We've got a lot more longevity in it.
Yeah, it's kind of a cross between a rubber and plastic, and it tends to hold up really well unless something gets up there and tears it. Every once in a while, you'll see one that the clamp's not sealed off tight, and it'll start slinging grease, from where the clamp is. But very rarely do you see the boot torn.
Mm-hmm.
They had a lot of practice because pretty much everything's got, front wheel drive. The independent rear suspensions have the same type setup on them, and all your four wheel drive trucks have a CV axle type front end under them. So they get plenty of practice at trying to make those things live. But we do have a caller online, so let's see what the caller can do for us. Caller, are you with us? Hello? Hello? Caller, you with us?
You scared him.
Must run him off.
Scared him, Doc.
Must have run him off. Okay. But anyway, it's, Back to some of the maintenance. There's a lot of things that people overlook. I mean, doing your oil change and that is great. Got to be done. We put a motor in a van today that the oil just hadn't been changed on often enough.
Really?
It had about 140,000 miles on it. little 4.3 V6, the new version.
But that's a good little motor.
But it's a tough little motor. We have very little trouble out of them.
Yeah.
And this one had problems with the cam time and stuff, and it's just because it wasn't changed often enough. You open the motor up and it's gummed up inside.
That don't happen now if you change your oil.
Right.
It's not going
to
gum up.
Everything we use is full synthetic oil, and that's what's supposed to be on all of them. But
do we have any vehicles now that runs the old mineral based oil?
Not really. Yeah. Pretty much everything is a full synthetic. But we're about to hit our break here and let you hear from our sponsors. We do have a caller waiting online, but we'll get to them as soon as we get back.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
Well, you've heard the story of the hot rod race that fatal day.
Welcome back to The Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle. Along with Tom Claxton, if you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. And speaking of callers, we have Jim online. Jim, you with me?
Yes, sir. I've got a 04 Buick LeSabre that has some kind of shutter in it. There has been no misfires or anything on the computer.
Yeah.
I've had the coils changed, the wires, the plugs, battery, and it still has it.
What kind of shutter are you talking about?
Between 35 and 45, if you start up a hill or put it under a load, it starts just shuddering and like it's trying to downshift or cut out.
Yeah. It's a good possibility. You've got a torque converter shutter. Fairly uncommon for that particular model, but... anything is possible. As you say, it's not registering any kind of misfires, anything like that?
No, sir, nothing showing on the computer.
Yeah. How many miles do you have on it?
100.
Yeah, see, and that's really not bad at all for that car.
It's not excessive.
You say you put coils and wires and plugs, right?
Correct.
Yeah. I would have to say you need to get somebody with a scanner to monitor the transmission and torque converter slip speed and drive it and monitor that while they're driving and see what's actually happening. I have a feeling you may have a torque converter problem, which is not good news by any means, but it is a possibility.
Is that an electronic?
No, it's
the torque converter itself.
Well, you have you have electronic control of the torque converter, but it's of the lockup part of the converter. But more than likely, it would be the converter itself if that's what's going on. Like I say, it's pretty rare on that car, but it can happen.
One of the things too that he's brought up is the fact that you get someone to check it. It's got the capability of checking it with a transmission. Diagnostic machine, right?
Well, the same scanner that'll do an engine diagnostic. It should be able to do the monitor your transmission as well, and you can actually monitor the slip speed of that torque converter. And if it's jumping all over the place, then you definitely have a converter problem. So that would probably be my next check if I was going to be looking at it. Yeah.
So that wouldn't show up in the history.
No, not necessarily. On that one, our computers have gotten a lot better since that time period, and even now it doesn't pick up much of a transmission torque converter shutter. That would be way too sensitive, and it would be setting codes all the time. So it's almost something you have to go in there and manually watch the speed to pick it up. So,
okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank y'all very much.
All right.
That's a fine automobile, though.
Yep.
You're not going to find anything that rides like that vehicle does.
No, sir. It belonged to my mother. She passed about 6 years ago. So I've been there.
Yep. I had a 98 Buick Park Avenue that I put about 300,000 miles on. Mm-hmm. Man, I loved that car.
Oh, yeah. Yep. All right. Well, I appreciate you calling in.
Thank you very much.
And we got another caller online. Caller, you with us?
Hey.
Hey.
Hey, guys, I didn't know if I was talking to you or not. How you fellas doing tonight?
We're doing good. We're doing good. How are you?
Hey, man, we're great. I just appreciate the y'all staying on the air and helping us out when we run across problems. I don't have a car, y'all, when we got a problem. But I got a good buddy of mine that just bought a new Chevrolet, and he had a lift kit put on it.
Mm-hmm.
And the damn ball joints went out about 1,800 miles, about 1,800 miles. And I just bought one myself, and I was worried about it because from what we can understand, is the lift kit's got it just right at the tip point, the worst point of those ball joints. And they told him that if he put any aftermarket thing on it, that, you know, make it stronger, it void his warranty.
Right.
If you have anything you can share with me about that, because I'm kind of worried. I just spent a lot of money on one myself.
Right. Well, you know, and one of the key things is anything you modify on a new car is not going to be warranted. Okay. It's not the way General Motors built it. Yeah, well, you know, and as built by GM, we have, you know, next to no problems out of them, okay? And you can do a level kit, what they call it. It's basically a 1-inch lift kit for the front, just to bring up the front just a little bit, and that doesn't put it in a bad place at all.
Yeah.
We have very little trouble with that. You know, first off, the factory, the only factory lift kit that I know of is, you know, they will put a factory lift kit on that brings it up to basically where the trail boss is, you know. Yeah. If it's the factory trail boss height, everything is actually at the normal height, shouldn't be a problem. If something broke, it was either defective or he hit something pretty hard. Because, you know, I haven't seen anything.
You know, everybody keeps telling me, and I know you got to take two or three jobs. There's my version, your version, nothing.
Right.
But I was worried about it because I got one myself. And I was just
right.
You know.
And like I say, the Trail Boss itself, you know, we've had no issues with the front suspension on them. You know, now there's other companies like Apex that does some, you know, modifies some GM trucks. And technically, it actually voids the GM warranty on the suspension, but Apex picks up the tab for that. No, I mean, if it's just because the dealer puts it on doesn't mean GM's going to warranty it, you know.
Okay. That's the question. I was
Yeah.
Sometimes they don't tell you all that stuff when they're trying to see you.
Yeah, I understand. It's like I say.
I know everybody's got to be trying, you know, but that's just one thing. But I just appreciate it. I really enjoy listening to you guys. Tell Mr. Clark, said hello, and y'all have a great night.
All right.
And hello back at you, brother.
But anyway, it's and that's a fairly common question that we get, you know. But just because, and we have one in the other day, in low mileage truck, it had had a lift kit put on it somewhere. Okay, I believe it possibly the dealer it was bought from, but they went a little too high and didn't put either the new axles in, the longer axles, or didn't put the axle spacers in there, whatever. They had already broken two CV axles in.
Woo.
And this was a pretty jacked up truck, taller spindles, the whole nine yards. And of course, we're not warranting it. And I don't typically work on lift kits. So,
no.
You know, we just, yep. You know, it's like you really need to take it back to the dealer you bought it from if they're the ones to put this on.
Right.
Because they need
right.
to fix it. You know,
that dealer,
not just patch it again.
That dealer put it on, then that dealer voided the GM warranty.
Right, right. So, you know, if they're willing to, you know, they're willing to get in there and fix it up for warranty, that's more power to them.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where, you know, we sell some Apex trucks, not a whole lot of them, but every once in a while. But what it is a upfitter will buy a truck, and then they will raise it up, change tires, put lift kit under it, maybe a little bit different exhaust, some other things. Technically, every bit of that stuff voids the powertrain warranty and the drivetrain and the suspension warranty on it. But Apex is willing to stand behind the factory warranties,
mm-hmm.
To where if need be, they pick up the tab for
okay.
the warranty repairs.
Yep.
So, to the customer, it's still being warranted, you know, by
the factory.
By the factory, but
even
it's
not.
That's actually Apex picking
right.
it up. So, but anyway, it all depends. If it's modified beyond that, then no.
Yeah, there
so,
you go.
Okay. But anyway, it's time for us to take a break, and we'll let you hear from our sponsors.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome back to The Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text. 343-0106. But our last caller got into a subject that can be touchy at times, you know, because, you know, there's a lot of things you can do to your car that you don't really think is going to affect the warranty. But something as simple as a cold air box can void the warranty on the powertrain.
Say what?
You know, just changing the air duct and the air filter housing and all that can change the powertrain warranty. If you do any kind of programming, correcting tire size or any of that kind of stuff, you know, if you go in and try and program it at all, boom, powertrain warranty gone. Okay.
If you try to program it and put one of these programmers in there, they're supposed to give you all this gazillion miles per gallon,
mm-hmm.
And you put your GM diagnostic equipment on it, it pops it up right quick.
You got to go look for it.
Yeah.
But the key thing is that if we have to do a major component replacement,
mm-hmm.
if it needs a motor or needs a transmission replaced or a rear end replaced or
okay.
whatever,
right.
the first thing I have to do is pull that information out. okay, and send it to GM, and they inspect it and let me know whether it's okay to do it.
Oh, not. They make that decision.
They make that call, not me.
Okay.
So I can look at it and pretty well tell you whether it's right or wrong.
The sophistication of their diagnostic equipment is more capable than what you guys have.
Right. Yeah. And the thing is all the programs have numbers, and they all have identifiers.
Okay.
You can go in and you can tweak some settings and all that, and all the program numbers look the same. The identifiers will change. So you can't go in there and program it. You can't go in and take your little programmer, put it in there, run it, play with it, do whatever, and pull it back out and put the factory programming back in it and expect me not to know it. Because I'll find it. It's there. So if you don't want to buy the right. motor or transmission or rear end or whatever for your vehicle, leave it alone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Our trucks, they're making 355 to 420 horsepower.
Woo!
You know?
That's a bunch.
It's plenty of horsepower.
On the gas that we're burning, too.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and then they're getting 20 miles a gallon on the highway. So, you know, it's doing what it's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's fine. Yeah, you can get more horsepower out of it, but is it worth it?
Right.
You know, for you to spend $8,000-$9,000 on a motor?
No.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
It's just not worth it. Yeah. And even you don't want to get into modifying the exhaust and all that kind of stuff. You can go in there and do something as simple as changing the cat back, which is basically anything behind the converter back. Well, it takes out the tuning. There's a tuning valve in the exhaust system to take out some of the drone noise,
right?
From the cylinder deactivation system. If that's not in there, it is extremely annoying to drive around in this vehicles because it just doesn't drown that out, and it just makes it very annoying, you know, to drive around on. Does it gain you any horsepower? Yeah, maybe. Not much, you know, because it's pretty free-flowing exhaust anyway.
Well, we don't have any damn drag strips we can drive new vehicles on anyway where we need all of that, and then try to drive them back and forth to work all the time.
Right, right. So, I mean, I think more power to you if you're willing to take the liability. But
okay.
Don't expect the manufacturer to step up and pay for your mistakes. So,
right.
You know, and we run into it every once in a while, not very often. Yeah, but it does happen.
Well, I had I've got a different car now. I got another Lincoln Town car, and it's got a, I guess you would call it a canvas type top. It looks it's kind of like a convertible top.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been trying to talk to everybody and his brother about it. It's been a garage kept vehicle, so it looks brand new. And I finally just went down and saw Boomer at the upholstery shop. And I said, all right, Boomer, what can I get to put on here to keep that thing from going bad? Nothing. Soap and water and a soft brush.
Right.
What? I said, well, what about going through a car wash? No, you don't never need to go through a car wash. Mm-hmm. What? What? Come on now. He said, no, because the car wash is going to eventually tear that top up.
Yeah.
Or discolor it.
Right.
And where
right.
And the wear factors where pressure's out on it when it comes up over that windshield, and that pressure's on there.
Right.
Then it jumps over the sunroof and hits that next portion there that's raised.
Right.
He said, "It's you know, you're gonna lose that top. You don't want to buy that top."
Oh yeah. Those tops can be expensive because it's actually a hard shell covered with that canvas material put on there. Because it's really a it's the same car as what you had before with this top added to it.
Right.
So factory did it, but, I mean, it's still like an add-on piece. Yeah. But it's and not cheap to fix.
Well, I got to get me a nice car brush, you know.
You're going to have to get out there with a hose and some soap and wash your car.
Have to sweat. Yeah, but I don't want to put a top on that car either.
Right, right.
But you know what I thought? I had a chance to drive it over to Florida back this weekend, and I said, oh, well, I'm going to try something. So I kicked it up to run it about 80, And I noticed on my RPMs, it went up to like 2,500, mm-hmm. 2,500 RPMs.
Right.
Well, my gas mileage dropped to 20.
Right.
20.3. I said, all right. So I drove it 67, 65 miles back, and I didn't get over 75.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically run somewhere around 70, 72, 74, somewhere in there. Went up to 23.5.
Right. Right.
I mean, and that just shows you where we at it. What I noticed was once I got back into that 70, 71, 72, 73 range,
mm-hmm.
I was on like 2,000 RPMs.
Right.
So, and the thing that I remember is after all of these years, that's some of the things that I was taught and I had read,
mm-hmm.
that is like the premium RPMs that are set at the factory with the gear ratios.
Right.
Size of the tires and all of that stuff, because mm-hmm. that doesn't abuse the motor.
Right, right. You know? Yeah, it's making it able to make a peak torque somewhere in that general
right.
area.
Right,
and the torque is what's moving the car anyway.
Yeah.
You know, if you get on beyond that, then it's using, you know, you've gotten beyond that and you're into the horsepower side of it to where you're having to twist it a little mm-hmm. harder to make the same kind of power. But it's you know, and all cars have their sweet spot as far
right,
as what,
right.
you know, because you get to a certain speed and then the wind resistance starts really fighting you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know our little Equinox, have a 2018 Equinox with a 1.5, and if you're running 80 mile an hour with it, you'll get 30. Yeah. You back it down to about 70 mile an hour. You're 35, 36 miles a gallon.
I'll be doing.
Gotten as much as close to 40 out of it.
Goodness.
Yeah. So it's a big change, you know.
It is. Yeah.
But, you know, it all depends on what you're willing to.
Well,
willing to do.
I've also experimented with that on the cruise controls. If I run it on cruise control, let's say from between here and New Orleans, or from here to Tallahassee or whatever, and to me that's down on the flatlands. We don't have any hills or anything here,
mm-hmm.
and any mountains to climb, then that works fine. The cruise control works good around here.
Mm-hmm.
But now if you start north and you go get on up there, you know, get around Atmore and all, you start getting those rolling hills and what have you,
right.
Cruise control will cost you mileage.
Mm-hmm. It can.
And I notice that when you start up a hill, if you got it, say, set on 70, 75, first thing you know, it's in like a full barrel mode or dropped out of overdrive into mm-hmm. third gear or whatever, or something is changing where the difference of cars, it could even be in the torque, you know, just in the torque converter.
Right.
You know,
right.
And changing the gear ratio there. But it's going to cost you, because it's immediately trying to get that mileage back up there.
Right.
And get that average back up where you don't have that problem on the coast, because you can just, you know,
right.
you're running along on level ground and it doesn't get in a bind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's true. I mean, it's, you know, and you can help it. You know, one thing with cruise control, you can reach over there with your foot and not kick the cruise off.
Right.
And let it maintain its speed going downhill where it's let off completely going down.
Right.
If you gain a couple mile per hour going down the hill
right.
and help it start
yeah,
climbing
yeah.
that next hill, you know, then it doesn't have to work so hard to go up the next
hill.
There you
go. Yeah.
You know.
So you still need to use your foot if you're going to try mm-hmm. to work, if you're worried about mileage.
Right.
But, I just figured that I got the car that I wanted. I got the car that I like the looks of. I got the car that's got the ride. I don't care what the gas cost.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean?
Right. Well, you're going to here shortly, it looks like. But,
it looks so. Like it if it gets $4 or $5 a dang gallon.
Yeah, yeah. We'll
yeah.
be back to driving these little puddle jumpers that, you know.
Oh, no,
40,
hell no. I ain't driving no tinker toy.
Yeah.
I ain't driving no tinker toy, baby. That's just all there is to it. Been
yeah.
down that road too long, too many years.
Yep, yep. You know, it's.
Make me think I'm driving that old 37 Ford with the flathead in it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, this is true. You know, people, it's like a little 29 Chevrolet we have at the shop. People look at that thing and it's like, man, those cars were little back then, weren't they?
Oh, yes.
You know? It's like, well, they made people smaller back then,
but you
apparently.
Know, we're sitting here today and tonight and we're talking about all the sophistication in the diagnostics and the tools we're using to check everything with and what we're adding to the vehicles and all. Mm-hmm. I can remember messing with my granddad on his, I believe he had an A model.
Yeah.
Had a running board on it.
Mm-hmm.
And he had built him a wooden toolbox.
Right.
You know, had it mounted on that running board. And I said, I think I've said this about, you know, 10, 12 years ago on the radio show. But he says, look in my toolbox over there and give me that rubber inner tube.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay. Sure enough, he had an old inner tube in there that was about half of it off of an inner tube.
Yeah.
And I said, well, what are you going to do that? He said, I'm going to increase the spark. What? He said, yeah, it feels sluggish.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd go out there and he had a magneto on it, you know?
Yeah.
So he would move that spark plug wire back further by changing that rubber deal on it to hold it.
Right.
And it would make that fire jump further from the spark plug
to the spark. Wire.
Make it a hotter spark. Oh, yeah, it runs good now.
Yeah. Yep, things we used to do, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, hey. They were ingenious, though.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome back to The Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text. Let's see here. We got a text from Michelle. Dr. Kevin, why do some engines make more torque than horsepower and some make more horsepower than torque? You know, it really depends on the build of the motor. It's kind of a design thing, you know. There's a lot of, like, the older vehicles, for one. Even, like, the big heavy-duty Chevrolet trucks back when everything was gas burner, they had the 366 Chevrolet big block. Made no horsepower, but it had all kinds of torque. But it was all about low RPM, just throw gear at it and make it pull low speed. It's really all in what you're trying to do with it, you know. A high torque motor like that is probably going to use more fuel than one that just makes some horsepower and you can keep it wound up just a little bit. But it's all in what the application is needing, you know, I guess for lack of better terms. But they're, you know, we're really getting away from large displacement motors. GM is probably one of the last holdouts for, you know, the big push rod V8. You know, and I can see down the road we'll end up being a smaller V8 if we're going to go stick with a V8. But
with a turbo?
Yeah, probably. Probably. But
well, that's economical horsepower, though.
It is. It is. But really, you know, GM's been able to, even in their new Z06 is coming out here for a long. It is a 4.5 liter or 4.4 liter motor, four valve per cylinder, mm-hmm. double overhead cam motor, making 60 or 70 horsepower normally aspirated. So. Nothing.
No tricks, turbo? No turbo?
Tricks. Yeah, no tricks. No power adders.
Just, oh, my God.
Just straight motor. So it can be done.
What kind of RPM range will that motor run?
I think it's capable of turning some pretty high RPMs. You know, upper in the 7 to 7,500 mm-hmm. RPM range easily. But, you know, the motors we have now make that kind of horsepower, but normally they're supercharged motors.
Right.
Or normally aspirated stuff now is somewhere in the 460 to 480 range, you know, for the Corvettes, but it's a little bigger displacement motor. It's 6.2 liter, so it's a bigger motor. But
is that those aluminum case motors?
Most of them are aluminum blocks.
Yeah. But do they sandwich them together? You know, like the outboard motors. Remember when they came out with those back?
Are
we still seeing that, or are we going back to a regular type block?
Well, our blocks never really did do well. They did do a few motors that had a mid plate, you know, which was the main caps all in one big piece. The North Star motors were like that. And there was another little V6 that was similar.
Actually,
but it
the cylinders were in the North Star, wasn't the cylinders loose in it? They had gaskets under them?
That was the motor before the North Star, but it was...
I know it was a pain in the butt.
Yeah, they didn't work very well. Mm-mm. But even the North Star made great horsepower, very smooth, very good power.
Is that the one that had the starter under the intake?
Had a starter under the intake, which was not the best idea in the world.
No.
It got it out of the way, everything else.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Anyway, the...
disassemble the motor to get to the starter.
Yeah. But the big problem with that motor, two problems with that motor. The mid plate, where the crankshaft sandwiched into the block, leaked.
You know,
and they were notorious for leaking. And also, it would pull the head studs out or the head bolts out of the block because they were not, they were relying on the aluminum casting in the block to hold the head bolts. Now, they had them down in there pretty good ways, but if they would have gone from the factory and put a metal insert down there,
and that would have worked,
sunk them in deeper, and used studs, you would have had no problems out of those motors. Yeah.
Well, that's eventually what they had to do with it to salvage that motor, wasn't it?
Right. Well, I mean, their salvage was they still used bolts and that, but, you know, if you were going to performance those motors at all, you had to go to studs.
Yeah, you had to stud them, you know, and to put the steel sleeves or that's not what they called it.
The helical.
Helicoils.
And, you know, ours, they call them time certs, but it's a.
Time certs, but we used ours were helicoils.
Right. So they made an insert in a whole kit to be able to time cert those motors and fix them. And it did a good job. But the LS style motor that we use primarily on all the GM stuff.
Ooh, that's been as good as the old 350s, you know.
And or better. It's definitely a more stable platform because the main caps, not only do they use four bolts to hold them down to the block, they also are cross-drilled and have two bolts from the side.
Like cross-bolt forward blocks.
Right. And so the crankshaft sits down in a skirted block, basically. So the block goes up higher than if you got the motor upside down, up higher than what the crankshaft is, where like the old small-lock 350s, basically the midpoint of the main bearings was where the block was machined off.
Right.
Well, this one actually is higher than that. So when you put the main caps on, the caps are bolted in from the side as well. So you have six bolts supporting that, and it braces
the
block.
Yeah, but they're bulletproof, though.
Right. You know, the stock block, stock crankshaft, without any modifications, is good for 1,200 to 1,500 horsepower.
Ooh, baby.
And, you know, you can put, if you change the rods and the pistons to put a higher quality.
Right.
You can make a 12 to 1500 horsepower motor.
Holy
forever.
Cow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It works well where you can do that with a small block Chevrolet without any real problems, but you got to modify a lot more to make it happen. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was a regular old small block Chevrolet. The majority of them came with two bolt main caps.
Right.
But then you had some, you know, some heavy duty. 350 short blocks that had a full bolt main cap, so that's what we were using to race with.
Right, and actually over the years they made a conversion cap that had the two outer bolts angled in there,
splayed
cap, which actually adds a it adds the second, you know, the outer bolts, but it takes instead of going straight down into the magnum web, and it kind of goes into the side of the block to where it's a stronger part of the block, and it makes it a pretty stout.
A lot of those blocks we took and took a two bolt block and put the four bolt main caps on it and put the splayed bolts in.
And that was the preferred method after a while. And I built a bunch of motors that way on my own stuff.
Yep.
But, Michelle corrected me on the size of the Z06. It's 5.5 liter at 670
she's
horsepower.
Smarter than we are.
She's sitting there on a computer.
Oh, she's on a computer. That's her. That's that little mechanical brain she's got there. Oh, she electronic
got
a, brain.
She got an advantage over me because I can't talk and type at the same time.
I ain't typing that.
Don't work for me. But
a lot of times my mouth don't keep up with my mind anyway. So
I appreciate her keeping me straight, though. That's
well, that's
all right.
Good. She's an awesome lady. Yeah.
So. But you know, it's going to be an awesome car whenever they get it out there, which I think it's about this time next year. I think it's supposed to be
straight,
available.
Probably got a $12,000 paint job on it.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, the very first one went for what I think $3.6 million.
I believe
something.
Mr. Hendricks has that.
Yeah, he's got a whole bunch of those. Yeah. One-off first of Corvettes.
He just bought that one of the big auctions.
Yeah. Yeah. So
over $3 million for the 01 car.
Yeah, VIN number one.
VIN one.
Anyway, sound like we run up to the end of our show. I want to thank everybody for listening to the Car Doctor's show, and I'll be back next week.
And bless all of you, and stay safe. There's a lot of this COVID still running around. Got a lot of people I know of has got it. Got it for the second time, but and bless all of our nurses and first responders and all of our veterans. A big hoorah.
One day I devised myself a plan that should be the envy of most any man. I'd sneak-